And welcome to the Mise en Scene Weekly podcast, where we harken back to our college debate days and pick two movies, but this one is all one and done. Of the same theme to clash like amps only can go to 10. This week's episode is focused on the greatest movie ever made by all platitudes, and you're wrong if you think otherwise. This is Spinal Tap, sits atop Mount Rushmore of all movie lists, including yours, including mine, and it's our first episode, like I said, with only one movie. This is episode 11, and you, the audience, are going to be the winner. Come join Nigel and David for another week of desirably less plot chatter and hopefully more film banter. We are Scene Weekly, and welcome to our world, and tonight, we're going to rock it tonight. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great, Jonathan. How are you?
I thought
we were going to do this in our native accent.
You sound like you're from like Nottingham or like a Scouse accent almost.
It's from Leeds, actually. Leeds.
This is, by the way, a show on This Is Spinal Tap.
Yes,
and you're David, and I'm Nigel Tufnell. Speaking of my first gamer tag that I ever created on Xbox was Nigel Tufnell.
Really?
It was. Oh, wow. Yeah, it was before. You know, I think it was immediately after us watching it for probably like the 17th time. In cross country, and no desirable woman actually wanted to watch with us.
I specifically remember the first time I watched this, and it was with you in Hiram, Georgia, in my parents' basement. I had like one of those big box TVs, not a flat, well, it was flat screen, but it was, you know, it took up the size of like an elephant. And my dad had this VHS tape called This Is Spinal Tap, and I'd never seen it. You had never seen it. You're like, let's watch it. And it just like,
the greatest movie of all time. By the way, I inherited that TV, and I
that's right.
Yeah. To move that, it was like one of those wood encasements, basically, that was basically like you chop down 14 trees, you put like a tube in it, and it was as heavy as any, well, I mean, we were cross country runners at the time, but very heavy. But in your basement, right?
They don't make TVs like that. They don't make TVs like that look like part of the furniture.
They just make them into the wall now. They also don't make movies like this. I mean, this is pretty much, your TV is probably from 1982 as well. But I mean, they probably are simultaneously affecting the same aura of invincibility, if that makes sense.
I agree. Yeah, they definitely don't make movies like this anymore. And this was also a first of its kind, if you know what I mean. Like,
I think I do. The mockumentary, and one in which, I mean, to this day, I mean, its budget was $2 million, but they started off with like a $10,000 for the script, and boy, did they crush it with those 20 original minutes. I don't even know where to start. I'm too excited. Like, I honestly have been thinking about this. We were going to push this podcast tomorrow or maybe even the next day, but I was like, let's get into this and see what happens.
We got to do it. You know, we got to do it. And this is, you know, the stars of this movie were all great at improv, and we might as well, I mean, we don't have a lot planned, so we might as well just kind of improv our way through this and see what happens. See if it's going to be, you know, any good.
Yeah. Rob Reiner, by the way, was actually going to be in the film, who was the director. And evidently he didn't look good in spandex. So he was outed from the group.
Was he going to be like in the band? Like
He was going to be in the band. Yeah. And then they were like, yeah, you might look a little chubs. You know, not that everyone is in shape per se, but you know, people did look, you know, David, Mr. David Hubbins, looked a little better, and Nigel, you know, a little better than probably a Rob Reiner. And he made director in the movie.
I found this out just the other day. So his name in the movie, Marty DeBerge, is a play on all like the famous directors at the time, like Martin Scorsese, Brian De Palma, Steven Spielberg, and Fellini. And he just kind of combined it all and was like, that Marty DeBerge. There we go. That works.
So let me tell you, by the way, first of all, it was 1984, 1982, but this is my conspiracy theory to some extent. I tried my damnedest to find this on every platform imaginable. And so I, strangely enough, had a DVD player that was unrelated to a PlayStation 4 that I also randomly had as well in the basement. For some reason, I thought first of getting the DVD player. But nonetheless, before that happened, I tried my damnedest to find this on every single platform. And then I convinced myself that this is exactly what they wanted. They were this small-time band, even though they had 15 albums. They were like, you know, going on tour again, and they're filming their exact tour. And eventually we'll get to the, you know, Japan talk. But like, I thought this was a core, like a, they got together and like, you know what? We're not going to put this on a streaming platform. We're going to make this a little difficult for people to actually procure to watch again, because we want to play this long game, this long con. And I was like, I'm still convinced of it. Why isn't this movie accessible on Amazon Prime? I have purchased every movie that we've done so far on Amazon Prime. And not this, though. I bought two DVDs. Bought one, didn't come in time. And I was like, I might as well just buy a second one. I have two DVDs now. So if anyone wants it, I will be willing.
I do, actually. I do. Because there is they do a lot of funny stuff on the DVD, not just the commentary, but like the title card that comes in. Like you don't get that on just any old streaming platform, which, yeah, it's impossible to find. But yeah, I do want that DVD.
How did you feel in your mother's and your father's basement watching this for the first time? Because to me, it was just, I mean, I'll leave it at that. How did you feel? I mean, if you even remember or recall.
I mean, trying to remember the feeling of it's like, I don't know, it's like losing your virginity or something like that, right? It's one of those things. It's just there's an explosion going on that of your mind, this kind of comedy and this kind of wit that they have. But yeah, I mean, at first, like, if you don't know going in, and I didn't know.
We were watching trailers back in the day, and we just like, oh, let's just put in the VHS and see what happens.
You kind of think like, is this a real band? Like, yeah. I kind of recognize these faces, but not really. Like, this is a documentary, you know, style cinema verite kind of thing. And I'm like, what's going on here? But once you kind of like see how the jokes are laid out, and like even like some of the bigwig executives kind of said like, we need you to kind of like be a little bit more like silly and not as like play it straight, so the audience knows that this is a joke. And they're like, no. Like, if the audience doesn't know this is a joke, then this is not for them. Like, they're not gonna like this movie.
Yeah, and at the initial like 20-minute like shot selection, I don't know what it's called, but they compiled basically like the original movie. And in that original, they actually, quite literally, and it also played in Canada, they're like, this is a fake band. Like, they would actually put like words on the screen that said like, this is actually just a mockumentary, effectively. And they went away from that after, you know, like probably Christopher Guest saying like, this is the dumbest thing ever. And so they went into like that ad-libbed more of like, let's just mock the absolute living shit out of basically all of rock and roll, which I found hilarious, because everyone who it was in rock and roll, like Ozzy Osbourne, for example, was watching it, was like, I didn't laugh a single moment. Like, this was not like, you came into my world, you desecrated it, and you basically made fun of it. And this is my literal world. Like, when they were talking about, like, one of my favorite lines, I'm already getting to it, of the entire movie is like them in the basement trying to find the stage. It was like, oh, you just take a jog to the left. He's like, I don't got time for that.
I don't got time for a jog.
There's multiple of bands saying like that is quite literally something that has happened to our band, where we sat and got lost in the basement of, you know, trying to get to the stage. And they're like, this is quite literally exactly what happens with a band. And I was like, that, it's like, when you watch it, you're like, is this real? Is this not real? I don't know. But the quintessential part to this, which I find the most hilarious, besides Ozzy Osbourne, besides any of that, normal folk went up to Rob Reiner after, and they told him, you know, I really liked your movie, but I think you should have chosen a band that was a little more you know, well in known. The news. And well known to be with Mockim to a documentary about. And I was like, you won. You won life right there. Like, yeah. That, you. There's nothing else to say. Hilarious.
And I think a big part is that, you know, this is before any kind of mockumentary or thing like that. Like a documentary was always the truth. There was never this kind of genre. And now you see it, like this spawned, you know, the Office, this spawned Parks and Rec, this spawned like you wouldn't have this kind of comedy without Spinal Tap.
Yeah. And, I mean, this is Spinal Tap. And the lines, you know, when we go into the ratings, we're getting ahead of ourselves. I am, at least. Just too
excited. Is it one of the most quotable movies of all time?
Number one of one. I guess if you dislike campy, but like if you dislike this type of humor where it's just for whatever reason you don't want to be a part of this, I can understand why maybe it's not the most quotable. You can do like Wedding Crashers or something like that, which, you know, I can get with too. But like this, to me, in terms of the complexity and also just the mocking tone, and there's layers to the way that these things are presented, it's the most quotable movie of all time, and hands down. Even when they're rolling the credits, I was like, this is so goddamn funny. Like, what would they say on your gravestone? I don't know. Everything about it is just it's honestly probably the most perfect movie I can think of.
Oh, so you weren't being no. You were truthful about it being the number one movie of all time, because I mean it is in my top tier.
Yeah, it's I have as you know,
I know you've ranked movies of your own list you know, multitudes of times and passed it along and stuff like that. I don't know if that's ever changing or what, but
it changes. I update it from time to time. And Spinal Tap, I think I don't know where it is. Old Boy is, and Memento, basically the movies you see behind me are pretty much my top four. Bicycle Thief, but it's a top 15 for sure, 100%. What about you? Where would you put this, you think?
Yeah, I mean, this is a movie that I feel, you know, if aliens crash landed on the Earth and we needed to give them something to just kind of understand humanity and who we are, this is like, I would just pass them this as Spinal Tap and say, please watch.
And please go away. They would immediately be like, this is what, after like almost 5 billion years that we have created, yeah, we're out. Like, this is all you've done. It'd be a pretty good one.
I was watching some off the cuff like interviews after the movie, and when they were about to go on their tour for their second album, and they were like on MTV, and their original VHS, or maybe the second VHS, was a VHS, but it was, the box was 6 inches longer than normal. Just like, I love that they just keep leaning into the joke. They just keep leaning in.
I love, they lean into the joke, but they also actually don't describe a whole lot, because I mean, you, over the years, I've wanted to understand exactly, like, if you actually, I read through the entirety of trivia, like trivia on trivia on trivia, but like, it's more of like a speculation from people that are actually pulling these like trivial facts together. So it's like, we think these characters were built upon this. We think these, but you know, the directing of Marty DeBurgi is definitely, they've commented on that, but the actual characters themselves, there's some intimation, but it's like more of a speculation. Like, yeah. I heard it through this person, I heard it through this person. So they're like really, they're doing a long con here, which I appreciate. I mean, they're taking this to the grave. And it's funny, I don't have many details on this, but there was, I don't even know if this is truthful. I'm just spouting off nonsense here. I think there was like a second documentary, and it was made by Marty DeBurgi's brother. And his name is, of course, his last name is DeBurgi too. I didn't even look too deeply into that, but like, I think it's a fake, it's actual fake movie. But if it actually is real, I would like to watch that next. But it's just, I have too many things to say about this movie. and it's probably coming out.
Yeah, how do we break this down? Like, I mean, this is our first podcast where we're just doing one movie. So do we need to explain?
Why don't I go into the details of the synopsis here? Unless you want to get into it. I have a synopsis if you haven't seen
I'll just chime in if I feel inclined.
So this is Spinal Tap. So the band is actually called Spinal Tap, and they originally were going to go by Spinal Tap, misspelled S-P-Y-N-A-L. And I'm actually glad they didn't do that for a variety of reasons. And I'm saying this as if I understand the complexity or lack thereof of how they chose their name. But this is Spinal Tap, S-P-I-N-A-L, shines a light on the self-contained universe of a metal band struggling to get back into the charts. That is an understatement. Even after 15 years, they are still attempting to do so. And including everything from its complicated history of ups and downs, gold albums, name changes, and undersold concert dates, along with a whole host of requisite groupies, which is interesting because in sex, drugs, and rock and roll, there's not a lot of sex or drugs happening in this Spinal Tap, but just a lot of rock and roll, really, when it comes down to it. And when it comes down to it as well, promoters, hangers-on, historians, sessions, release dates, and pretty much everything that you would expect in between, and the chaos of, I would say, a middle-aged band not wanting to give up to the twilight of their own existence and thinking they still have it, and the turmoil that occasionally pokes its head out and says, "Hello over there on this side of the pond." Yeah.
I love how this movie... it starts off as like we're about to witness the biggest, best rock band, you know, documentary, like just climbing through, you know, Tap Into America. And we're going to see all the highlights. Right. And then it just, it's like just a slow
burn,
a slow burn just down the stairs. And they're just falling down the stairs. Is this the bottom? No. This is the bottom. Wait, no, this is the bottom. And they just keep going down.
It's like a herpes outbreak, which, you know, by the way, they, you know, a couple band members, spoiler alert, they appear to have some cold sores, which I find hilarious because the original draft of the movie, the very beginning, as you say, where Marty DeBerge, Rob Reiner, big fan of Spinal Tap and also, you know, wanting them to succeed. Terrific acting job, by the way, by Rob. Like I try to like pick him apart throughout. I'm like, he really fucking loves this gig. Like he was so serious in like his presentation and his performance. But the original script and the original like shot, which I think they shot maybe like a small amount of it, was an opener with a all woman band, and basically that's how they got herpes. So there, you know, there was like a scene of the more of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and they cut that out ultimately.
You can allude to the sex part just with the cold sores on the lips, and it's very apparent. But I love Rob Reiner in this. I thought he did a great job. This was his directorial debut, and what a tear that he went on in the 80s, like this, and then Princess Bride. He had an incredible run. But just his delivery on things, like he's introducing Spinal Tap at the beginning of the movie, and he's like, you know, I was impressed by their appearance and their sound and their punctuality. And it's just like all these like little just these jokes that kind of fly under the radar, but you can catch them, you know. It's great.
I catch something new every single time, and I actually hadn't seen this in a pretty long period of time, probably because in college I had seen it way too much. I remember after we watched it, we took it on the bus. Was that your copy of the VHS?
It's probably my copy.
Yeah. So we brought that, and like the entire girls team was like, we're out. Like immediately we put it on, it was just like dudes. And that's where I was like, Yeah, it appears that women don't really like this movie. Or us. Could be us. Could have been us. Could have been you.
Yeah, I mean, well, the representation of women in this movie isn't a very glowing spin on that. It's a very male-dominated movie, and the girl that ends up in the movie, Janine, is kind of a wedge between the two main guys, which we can talk about later. But
I actually have a question for you.
Sure.
And it's one in which that I often think about how I would be if I were either in a band or like an Elon Musk billionaire type. Just to be clear, I'm not. And but if you want to provide us with money, Spindrift, please sponsor us now, or a Hefeweizen, you can do that too. Popcorn would actually be excellent. But I'm just thinking,
popcorn in general. Just it doesn't.
Yeah,
just popcorn.
Popcorn. The Lidl popcorn actually would be pretty terrific. But if I were in a band, how, if any way, shape, or form, how would I change if I did change? And I think was it Billy Crystal? No. Was it Billy? Who was driving the limo? Was it Billy Crystal?
No, that wasn't Billy Crystal. Billy Crystal was the
Billy
mime.
Crystal was the mime.
That was Bruno Kirby. Kirby.
The name is escaping me, but as he's talking about, you know, Frank Sinatra and being loved and lost, like they're not going to understand. And before he rolled up the window of the limo, he's the limo driver. If you are in an Uber, or if you are in a taxi now, for example, do you put in like AirPods? Because that would more or less be the same situation, I would say. And then, or do you not talk to the taxi driver, generally speaking? So I'm thinking this is meant to be a rude thing, but these people are going from town to town. They're staying in hotels. They probably just want to relax when they have the time to relax. They don't want to actually be like pestered with questions. So I was thinking, actually, I'm probably on Spinal Tap's side. I would probably roll up that window too. What are your thoughts?
It's rude. It's rude. I mean, the guy asks, "Hey, are you reading Yes, I Can by Frank Sinatra?"
Yeah.
They like, they respond, "Yeah." They could have said, "Yeah, but we're having a conversation right now, blah, blah, blah." No, they don't do that. They say, "Yeah, we're reading that." Well, it should be Yes, I Can if Frank Sinatra tells me it's okay. And then they roll up the window.
But
it's rude. It's not right etiquette.
He's a limo driver, though. He should not have that etiquette to begin with. I think the window should be up to begin with. And then it's like, knock, knock, can I talk to you? Like, to me, yeah. It's like, I don't think that you're providing a service to people.
I think the window was down because Marty DeBerge was in the passenger seat, had the camera, and he was kind of filming both things. You know what I mean? So
I get it. I just don't think it was that rude. It was just, you know, direct. They don't know their emotions too well, even though they write songs that appear to know their penises for sure. They don't know their emotions too well. And, you know, that's how they are able to deal with things.
What do you, Jonathan, what do you do when you get in an Uber or something like that? Do you have
Nigel?
Do you have both ear pods in and you're just tuning them out, or what? What do you do?
I'm not a billionaire, nor am I famous yet. So I don't do the AirPod thing, and I think you probably know the answer to this. I don't do the AirPod thing, but with that said, if I don't want to talk, I would say quite literally just that. I would say, I've had a tough day. I don't want to talk. I don't even like say it in the, you can put it in the notes, right? Like, I don't want to chat. No, I'll confront the situation and be like, I don't want to chat. So I just,
you'll say it out loud.
I can use my voice. Like I don't need this app to tell you what's going on.
Have you had the Chatty Cathy before? Like, has that happened?
I have. We picked up my mother, my entire family at an LGA, and we drove back to Midtown West with Sonia, and we got a Chatty Cathy. It was a man, and I, you know me well enough, I was very direct. Well, I initially was like, "Hi, can we talk to the family? And like, we don't need you involved," in a nice way. And then, you know, after three of those, it was just like, how is this even possible? Like, that somebody is like lacking of such self-awareness that we're still having this conversation. And then I was like, do you want me to get out with everybody from here in the middle of Queens because we made it like 4 minutes. I was like, I don't know what's happening. Can you please just shut? I didn't say shut the fuck up. I was like, can you please just let us talk? And he didn't. He continued to, you know, I would say he cut it in half, but it was like still, wow, this guy, I hope, you know, still isn't haunting me and trying to murder me in the next year. But nonetheless, if you are lacking of that much self-awareness, you should just shut the fuck up.
We don't know if the limo driver was piping in on things earlier. Like he could have been trying to do this to them earlier. They just had enough and they put up the window. Like
speaking of piping in, how much poontang do you think Spinal Tap got?
Well, I mean, they've got armadillos in their trousers, so I guess it's from their perspective. Who knows?
Do you think an armadillo in your trousers would be a good thing to have? Like, what would you say? Like, I think maybe like a small zucchini would be like a really good one. I've got a small zucchini in my trousers. But armadillo's like, man, you're gonna hurt somebody. Like, no matter who they are. I mean, maybe if you're fucking an elephant, then that would be good. But like, I got an armadillo. Like, god damn, dude, you need to probably relax with that, son. No?
I mean, it's what they said. It's what they have. So I gotta assume that their exploits are, you know.
What's wrong with being sexy?
And I feel like it's this whole podcast. We could just throw out lines, just quote lines.
We probably could. Yeah. But if you were in a bit, hit me up with a question. What do you got?
What did you think about some of their like Spinal Tap's earlier forays into the music? Because they kind of have this trajectory of like this, you know, they started off, you know, Nigel and David as kind of childhood friends, and they were in Lovely Lads and then the Originals and the New Originals, and they had this kind of like, you know, 60s kind of music, and then the flower power child kind of music, and then they kind of get into rock and roll. Like, you know, are they just chasing the fad, or what are they doing?
No, I don't think they're chasing the fad. I think they're actually highly unintelligent creatures that they're I guess to some extent, yes, they're chasing a fad, but they're also interested in that fad they're chasing. Because I think it's hard to not be attracted to rock and roll when you're a stupid white male. And that's why we're sitting here with wigs on our heads, white, talking about a movie that happened before you were born.
Oh, it was 1984 is when it was released. All right.
Yeah, and I'm 1981. And so I was 3 years old when this came out. But
let's hear some of the reviews of their earlier stuff.
Talk about your reviews a little bit regarding intravenous DeMilo. This tasteless cover is a good indication of the lack of musical invention within. The musical growth rate of this band cannot even be charted. They are treading water in a sea of retarded sexuality and bad poetry.
Well, that's nitpicking, isn't it?
The gospel according to Spinal Tap. This pretentious, ponderous collection of religious rock psalms is enough to prompt the question, what day did the Lord create Spinal Tap, and couldn't he have rested on that day, too?
That's a good one.
Review you had on Shark Sandwich, which was merely a two-word review, just said, shit sandwich.
Can't print that.
That's not real, is it?
You can't print that.
They can't print that.
Dude, it's something that I think, you know, it's been 20 years probably since we both watched this for the first time, and I don't there definitely has not been a movie since, and I would hope, man, that there's going to be a movies after. You know, all the Christopher Guest flicks are terrific, but they're not this. Like Best in Show, also fantastic, but they're not this in any way, shape, or form. But to answer your question directly, the original music was interesting, with cross-eyed you, Mr. David. It's exaggeratingly cross-eyed, which is
<That's> hilarious.
It was just like well over the top, making fun of the Beatles, clearly.
Give me some money, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Give me some money. By the way, Well, we might as well get into it. What is or was your favorite song by Spinal Tap?
That's tough. I would have to say... The wordplay on that is great. You know, how could I leave this behind? I mean, the double entendre, brilliant writing. You can't, so poetic.
It's they also, it's like a riff on Queen. I mean, everything on this entire movie is a riff on something. Like it's someone somewhere is being made fun of and mocked.
Yes.
I mean, the entire, like in things that we probably haven't even seen before. I mean, I went to the trivia and I was like, holy shit, they really did a significant amount of like research, which every single one of them, all of the characters, basically there was a substantial amount of ad-libbing that actually happened, so much so that they had a debate to like have writing credits.
Oh yeah. Like, I heard about this. They gave the writing credits ultimately to the three main leads, Nigel, David, and Derek Smalls. But those three really pushed for everybody in the cast to get a writing credit. And they even went to the WGA for this and they like petitioned for this. And the WGA said, no, we're going to give it to you three. We can't do the whole cast, because this movie, they literally just had like these kind of outlines, and they said, all right, this is kind of the set piece of what we're doing. And they improvised the whole thing.
But that's actually the precursor to Curb Your Enthusiasm. Like that's how exactly Curb Your Enthusiasm is shot. There's no scripts. There's no nothing. Like it's basically, to a T, it's the movie version of Curb, but they did it before Curb. I actually did not know this until maybe yesterday or 2 days ago when I was looking up the 7,000 facts of Spinal Tap. It's so funny to me. It's the only movie on IMDb that goes to a score of 11.
Stop. Instead of,
I swear to God. So it's got a 7.9 out of 11. And I was like, I was reading the trivia on IMDb because they have a nice little trivia, and then I was like, this can't be real. Like I'm on your website right now, and like I don't believe this. So I like typed in a separate like web browser Chrome, and I was like, Spinal Tap. This is Spinal Tap. And then I looked it up and I was like, holy shit, it does go to 11. Even the movie ratings go to 11. I was like,
can you rate an 11?
Brilliant.
Are you able to rate it? That's the key.
It's a 7.9, so I don't know.
There's a fine line between stupid and clever.
Is there? Because I think they're very, I mean, is there? I mean, I guess this isn't the entirety of this movie. Are you stupid for liking it, or are you clever?
To come up with this kind of comedy takes a very smart person. A very smart person. Yes.
Does it? You think?
Yes. 100%.
I think 100%. I think it takes somebody. So I think to play on it repeatedly, yes. But I think stupid people can come up with some very quirky, interesting ideas.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yeah. But I feel like most great comedy is derived from very intelligent people.
Yeah.
Besides, you can have comedy that you know, fart jokes and you know, kick somebody in the nuts and whatnot. And yeah, that could be funny to some people and whatnot. And in that moment,
but like, everybody.
But I feel like comedy that can last generationally, that takes farts. A special talent.
Farts. I understand what you're trying to say.
There's things that can be inherently funny. But that's inherently funny. You don't have to have a brain to think that or to come up with that. You have to have some other parts. But
that's fair.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a brain, but you do have to have an anus to come up with that.
By the way, is that a Les Paul behind you on your left?
Yeah. It's a Fender Stratocaster, and it's all of my first guitar.
I have two.
I don't know why that was a question that I had in my head to qualify. I listened to this band. I got a sticker like from one of my first concerts. The wig just keeps pressing back. I must not have a head for wigs, I guess. Job, don't know anything about the band. Very clean toilet, though. I mean, blue water. Everything. I can't play the guitar, for which, by the way, all the main characters can actually play instruments and are singing throughout the movie. They're lip singing, by the way, but they did record their actual vocals, even some of them with, you know, three bass lines. They did actually record everything themselves, which is bananas.
And it's also to a point that when this film was being edited, they were watching the editors, and the editors were just kind of like putting on clips of like not where they were actually playing that part of the song, and the actors got furious. They're like, no, like you have to be cutting to the part where I'm playing this note, or it doesn't work, because we want to actually look like we're a real band. And I thought that was genius on their part.
Only a band person or band member or somebody who like plays some sort of instrument would actually understand that, though. And so like that is actually, in terms of intelligence, that's a very, very detailed, probably the most nuanced joke I can think of, which leads me to a question. Do you play any musical instruments besides the flute?
The flute?
Yeah.
Since when did I play the flute?
Oh, I thought the Ron Burgundy influence. I thought you had a
no. I played the trombone
The trombone.
Yes, very different than the flute. Thank you very much.
Got it.
But the trombone, it's a brass. It's a slide. I'm sure everybody knows what a trombone is, right?
Yeah.
I'm explaining a trombone. But
I mean, we're in a movie.
But I got put into band. Everybody had to take band in middle school. My parents are musicians. They were in the Air Force band, and I had never played. I never played a musical instrument besides a recorder. You know, growing up, as you know, elementary kids do. My dad wanted me to play sports, not instruments.
It was the recorder.
Oh, the recorder. I can play hot cross buns. I'll finish telling my trombone story. So I get put in advanced band, and I never played the trombone before.
How did you get into advanced band?
Nepotism.
What did band look like? And how did you get to advanced band without playing anything? And you're just like, trombone, advanced band, put them there. White male with the David. What is happening?
Because my parents were musicians, so they thought maybe I could just pick it up really quickly.
Your teachers were not using Google, which didn't exist at the time, to say, oh, his parents are musicians. We are going to put him in an advanced band. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So I get into advanced band. I have no idea what I'm doing. And I'm just kind of like just sliding the thing, trying to get by. And I get an award at the end of the semester or the quarter or whatever it is. I get the most improved award, which is like saying you were pretty bad and you're still bad, but you got some kind of better, I guess.
You know, it's funny. When I was in my freshman year of high school, I was on the basketball team for my high school. And I was hoping for the most improved award, and I didn't even get that. So that's how bad I was.
I made all my free throws.
Clearly, I'm not going to get MVP. Like, clearly. And there was like, you know, just three awards. And I was like, the most achievable is probably most improved. And I didn't.
Were you one of the tall ones on your team?
No, I was so short. The guy that did get most improved actually was extremely improved. Like, looking back, he actually went to state. And I think they got fifth in state when he was we were both seniors. Robert, and he went to play as in full scholarship for the Army, and ended up being like a terrific basketball player, more so than any other person that I played with. But he deservedly got most improved. But this is like harkening back to my days of insecurity. To answer your question, I was not tall. I was 4'11", sixth grade.
And then, were you chunky? Were you heavy?
I was never heavy. And so, I, as you know, I was 208 pounds, 2015. But like, I was probably 5'6", if I had to guess, if memory serves.
That's short. I'm
very tall. My earth science teacher as a freshman in high school, he's the track coach as well. He was, and I was friends with his, like, his daughters. He was like, I don't know if basketball's for you. And like, having this like real conversation of like, maybe you should probably think of something else in your life. And I was like, I'm going to be the next Michael Jordan. Very stupid as a kid. But, like 3 years later, of course, we all know what happened. I went out for the track team. But that practice that happened that like a week later, basically, we went out for track practice. I'm getting off topic. After a track practice, we ran a mile, and I ran 5:16 as a freshman. And then everyone was like, you should really go out for track. And I was like, dude, track is for pussies. Like, why would I go out for track? Like, you don't run somewhere? Like, this is dumb. And then here I am running for 2,000 days in a row. But nonetheless, back to Spinal Tap.
Look at that.
That's we're nitpicking, just, aren't we?
We're picking nits, yeah. That's nitpicking. I really want to talk about the whole idea of this movie is they're going on a North American tour, and they're about to release their newest album. Do you remember what the name of that album was called?
No idea.
No idea?
No, none.
Well, I'll tell you. This is the conversation in the movie about this this provocative album.
But listen, I really do have to talk to you a bit about this this whole issue of
whatever's on your mind.
The issue of the cover.
Yeah.
We feel, and it seems to be facts, that the company is rather down on the cover. Is that the case?
Yes.
You can give it to me straight, you know.
Listen, they don't like the cover. Uh-huh. They don't like
the
cover.
Well, that's certainly straight.
They find it very offensive and very sexist.
Well, what exactly do you find offensive?
Ian,
what's offensive?
You put a greased, naked woman on all fours with a dog collar around her neck and a leash.
And a leash.
And a man's arm extended out up to here, holding on to the leash and pushing a black glove in her face to sniff it. You don't find that offensive?
No,
you don't find that sexist?
This is 1982.
That's
Bobby,
right, it's 1982. Get out of the 60s. We don't have this mentality anymore.
Well, you should have seen the cover they wanted to do.
I don't care what they want. See, now this is something, Ian, that you're going to have to talk to your boys about.
We're certainly not laying
down
any
conditions.
And I
don't think that a sexy cover is the answer for why an album sells or doesn't sell, because you tell me, the White Album? What was that? There was nothing on that goddamn cover.
What's wrong with being sexy?
That's pretty sexist. Sexist.
It's so goddamn terrific because I think it's actually conversations that people would have in real life.
100%.
By the way, Fran is unbelievable. Like, also her performance is terrific. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, I believe when you're listening to that again, it's like she believes it. Like, it's a part of her. It's very, very good performance, honestly.
And you know that Fran Drescher had her own TV show in the 90s called The Nanny, right?
Yeah.
Another little trivia fact. So her character, Bobby Fleckman, showed up in an episode of The Nanny. And now I read about this and I saw a little clip and now I want to watch that episode.
I had no idea. Really?
Yes. Yes.
See, this is where things get interesting to me. It's like, where else can you go down this rabbit hole of like nonsense?
You want to know another nonsense? Yes. I think I heard this before, but I died laughing last night because when Spinal Tap was releasing their second album after the movie, Break Like the Wind, they were giving away, they had their, people could buy this promotional calendar. And when people received the promotional calendar, it came in a box and they opened it up and it accidentally was a colander. Not a calendar. And I want to buy one on eBay. You can still buy these with a little note on that that says, please excuse this calendar. We've got the mistake of sending.
It's just like, it's so good. It's so good. I mean, oh, God. This. I don't know how I'm going to get back to this part.
Where does he come up with this, man? I don't know. Like,
it's like dad jokes that somebody smoked meth and was like, let's create the best dad jokes of all time. One of our, like, it's just, what does it look like on the calendar?
It's a little kitchen equipment.
No, I know. Like, I know what a calendar is.
Yeah.
I know what a calendar is. What does that calendar look like?
It comes with a little note. It says,
oh, it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
It does. It does. I swear to you. I'm gonna buy one on eBay. You can buy one on eBay.
A moat? It comes with a moat?
Note. Nigel, a note.
I was like, a moat. When are you going to get on your steed and cross the moat? All right. What does the note say?
I mean, I can pull it up, but basically it says like,
I got to get past this. I'm crying. By the way, when you sent me a picture of what you're wearing now, I was literally crying. People say literally now is figuratively, which is an interesting thing, but I couldn't stop laughing. Pretty much like I'm doing now.
Anyway. Here's the note from the colander. It says, notice, an irregularity in order fulfillment led to the production of colanders rather than calendars. We hope you find the enclosed item useful.
But you would.
I would, yeah.
How often do you use a colander?
Oh, I use it all the time when I'm making pasta.
How often do you use a calendar?
I have a calendar in my room that I use and I mark things and I cross things off. And I
do you think you use a calendar or colander more often?
Oh, a calendar, 100%. 100%.
Does what about you? Calendars count as a colander?
What is what?
Does Outlook calendars count as a colander?
Now you're losing me.
Outlook, but, a Microsoft Outlook?
Yeah. You can use that as a colander.
Now you're gaining me. I think there's a lot of things being cooked in our colanders here. But I definitely use a calendar more. And that joke I will probably steal for the rest of my life. Anyway, this film, by the way, was, I haven't actually seen it. I only realized this like 5 days ago. It's shot in like, there's 2 or 3 hours extra.
Oh, there's like 4 or 5 is what I heard. Yeah.
There's an extended version of this. How have we not gotten here? And also, if you're Christopher Guest and Rob Reiner, why are you not you know, I think this is kind of like the Talking Heads, which I'm actually reading David Byrne's book, How Music Works Right Now. One of my probably a top three band for me of all time. And speaking of like putting things on lists, but I think they got, he basically said like, I'm not going to tour ever again because we've just done this before. And I feel like, you know, not that Christopher Guest and the others need money, but like if they were to actually go back on tour, if they were to go on tour, would you watch them? If Spinal Tap is like, we're doing like Rob Reiner and like everyone.
Listen, John. Listen.
Would you go?
I would be there front row. And they have actually, they've gone on tours intermittently over the past, you know, 10 or 15 years. And a funny thing is they'll have this band called, they'll have this band from A Mighty Wind open up. And it's basically the same people as Spinal Tap, the same exact people. And the people watching them don't even realize that that's also Spinal Tap.
Yes, but this is like Banksy. It's like Banksy, like presenting art in like Central Park. Basically, like nobody knows like he's actually going to be there selling art.
Yeah,
I'm just saying like if they presented it like a year out and saying we've got. Not even new songs. You can go and play whatever the fuck you want to play. Tonight we're gonna rock it tonight. Like
Sex Farm,
play
the hole. Yeah,
I'd be there too. But like, how many other white, middle-aged white males are gonna be on like, you know, front row central, like hanging out?
Like, I think there'd be a lot of professionals
with hair like that. Yes,
neurosurgeons.
Do you think Boston is not a good college town?
You know, I've never thought of Boston as a good college town. No, it's probably like, what do you think? One or two colleges there.
Yeah, it's funny because
like, I love how Ian just kind of like he's leading this band and he can just kind of he's a horrible manager, but he can just pass these things off as like it's no big deal. Like they check in the hotel. So yeah, we got seven rooms for the hotel. We actually booked you on the seventh floor and we have one room. How the hell do you think I'm going to fit 14 people in a King Leisure?
Well,
he's not a good manager.
You have to go wait in the lobby for.
That was one of my favorite lines too. Wait in the lobby for the limo. It's like, we don't have time for you. I don't want to talk to you. This is them just raising the limo barrier to them and saying.
Speaking of Ian and their manager. I don't know how deep you got into the trivia, but like, I actually thought, it's, you know, we've had some interesting moments recently for us and our friends, but like the situation in real life with the manager of the band actually tried to commit suicide.
Yeah. He committed suicide the day before shooting the first scene. And
no, he did not commit suicide because
he
in the movie to begin with, just to be clear.
Yes.
Documentary. he tried to commit suicide and he was like, went into this, you know, I guess the shooting of the movie and it, I don't want to say it saved him or whatever it might have been, but like, you know, he got out of it.
He found a lot of joy in the process of making this movie that I think you can kind of like say that, yeah, it definitely like helped him. Perceive his life differently after that.
Do you think armadillos in your trousers actually help?
Help with what?
I mean,
it might help you get through like airport security rather than having something wrapped in tinfoil.
By the way, do you think logically it makes sense for things to go to 11? Just to me, that makes sense. Like, if you want to make things louder, you would just go to 11. And then, like, you know.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage. But it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board. 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11.
And amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up, yeah. All the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to
11. 11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
It's the pause. It's the pause that Nigel gives when he's like considering this question from Marty DeBurgi. Why don't you just make 10 louder? Make that a little louder.
To me, it's the pause. The pause is him thinking because he can't comprehend it. But like, and there's many situations in like film like that. But like, it's the pause and the look. And it's the acting ability of Christopher Guest, Nigel, me, my character, in that movie that I think is just absolutely just selling it.
Yeah, all these great like comedians at the time, they were hanging out at Rob Reiner's house in Hollywood, the Hollywood Hills or whatever like that. And they would have like literally parties 5 nights a week, and they would just hang out and riff and like just, I mean, these melting of minds coming together and coming up with some brilliant stuff. So that would have been
David,
fun.
Have you ever grown a mustache before?
Me? Yeah, I have. I can definitely show you a photo of it sometime.
Yeah, I think I've seen the photo, but like, how did you feel growing that? And I guess secondarily, have you actually grown a Fu Manchu? And how, let's just start there. Have you grown a Fu Manchu, or have you at least, are you typing in like, what is a Fu Manchu right now?
I know what Derek Smalls has. I am very aware of those lovely handlebar
knowledge. Nobody is gonna put me down here. But have you grown that or like cut it?
I can't say that I have, nor that I've had the inclination to do so. For one, I have to be clean shaven for work, and that doesn't allow me the opportunity to experiment with facial.
How long have you worked
varieties? How long have I worked?
How long have I'm you working, worked to the extent that
Nigel, I'm working right now.
That you can't shave your, you have to shave your face. So for example, there was a period for which I think I knew you. Maybe I don't know so much about you now. But from a 2005 period, whenever you started growing hair on your face, to the job you have now, you could have done something on your face. And why not a Fu Manchu? Have you ever grown a beard and then just trimmed it up?
Yeah, of course. And usually when you grow out like a little bit of a beard or more of a beard, what does 95% of guys do? They shave, and they kind of shave it to their Fu Manchu, and they shave that off and do the mustache, and they go a little, and then, you know, you have the mustache.
You would probably do the Hitler. Yeah. Yeah. You seem like you would. Yeah. Yeah. You probably have a lot of German in you.
Yeah, I don't do the Hitler.
That's your hair.
It's the Charlie Chaplin is what I do. I do the Charlie Chaplin.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Chaplin. That's Chaplin. Hitler. Because he had, you know, he was making.
Yeah.
Hitler. That's too soon.
So what about you? Have you ever had a Fu Manchu or like that kind of, you know,
yeah,
gnarly facial hair?
Yeah, I've done all of the, you know, to wear out in public. A Fu Manchu is a, it is a very aggressive, but all, you know, I'm from Florida, born and raised. So why not? I think I'm too. I remember when, I don't think you were a part of this, but JP and others, we all cut our hair, which by the way, you're one guard and your two guard when you shave your head is the best I've ever seen of any human. Most attractive human being of all time. His forehead is a seven head. But with that said, we cut our hair to have mohawks. And I went
to, I was there. I was part of that.
You grew a mohawk? Or you trimmed it?
It was the night of after I think it was freshman or sophomore year. right at the end of the semester, we all shaved our heads into mohawks. And I have a picture of myself with a mohawk. And I think we went out to that Mexican restaurant with a mohawk.
Oh, the border?
Yes, the border.
Giving us some clarity here. So, yes, I don't remember any of that, but I do remember your head. Oh, I do remember that picture. Anyway, nonetheless, I went to class the next day and I wore a hat. And I'm that type of person.
You still have the mohawk?
And here I am on a podcast wearing some fake hair, talking about a movie that existed and the time that I didn't want to wear a mohawk to class. But it takes a while.
You're for everybody in there at the internet to see.
It's a while.
Is that? No, your T-shirt, is that like an exact replica of your inner workings right there?
Yes, and it's green.
It's great.
It's great. It's great. It's the exact replica of my insides. And if you were to cut me open right now, you get just this. Like this. My spinal cord. Just like a tapping.
Did you cut the sleeves off, or did it come like that?
What do you think?
I think you cut them off. I think you're.
I've never cut off sleeves. No, I have. I've probably cut off sleeves on like maybe two or three items of clothing that I've had in the past, but this is the first I've cut off. I thought of Cameron Haynes, who is a fellow. I'm not an ultra marathoner, but we're runners, I would say. And he cuts off all his t-shirts. I'm a big fan of Cam, but I found it hilarious that I was cutting it off. But he cuts it off like very deep because he's a ripped man, and I'm just a big old pussy. And so I wanted to keep it tight. And I was like, oh, my arms are not large enough.
You kind of had a quote the other day when we were in on the boat in Florida, and it kind of circled back to me when I was watching this movie. Because Derek Smalls, the one with the handlebar Fu Manchu, is describing his bandmates in Nigel and David. And he said, they're kind of like fire and ice. And I remember I asked you, I was like, you're cool, right? You think you're cool. And you're like, no, I'm not cool. I think you had the same quote as Derek Smalls is. And I'm like, the lukewarm Walter.
I don't know what else to add to that, but I don't remember any of that.
You don't remember that? Okay. All right. Well, I do. I do. And
we were there for somebody's 40th birthday. And Spindrift, if you'd like to sponsor us, just let us know. Lemon is actually the best. No, I don't remember that, but I that would be something I would say. If I wanted to not talk to somebody for very long.
Okay. You're going to go wait and laugh. Hey, I'm just as God made me. Okay.
I just like, what can I say right now to get this person away from me and like not be that interesting and like also not be that like repulsive? I'm like, yeah, just look warmly like, oh, there he goes. He's walking away. Thank God. Oh my God.
Let's
right now.
Let's listen in. Let's listen in about the history of Spinal Tap's drummers. What do you think?
Did you ever drum as a kid with your recorder?
No, I. My parents never wanted me to have. It's kind of funny because I asked for drums and they didn't want me to have drums in the house because it would be too loud. But my mom
in a basement.
Yeah, but still, my mom would practice her bagpipes in the house while I was trying to watch Wheel of Fortune.
Wait, say everything again. You're saying your mother wanted to practice bagpipes in the house while you, as a wee bit child, wanted to watch Wheel of Fortune?
It was around that time, yeah. It was like right after dinner, I was going to watch Wheel of Fortune, and then my mom would practice her bagpipes.
What are we doing right now? I need to be on a podcast with your mother. Like, you are so lacking of interest to me right now. Your mother knows how to play the bagpipes?
I told you, my parents were in the Air Force band. That was their profession. That's what they did.
That's great. I have so many other questions. So, like, what happened to you in this time, and how did you not have an argument with your mom about the bag? Like, mom, the bagpipes. Like, what is happening?
I mean, you can't really say anything when Amazing Grace from the Bagpipes is coming out. Like, what are you going to do?
That's a fair point. I don't know what I would do. Like, can you turn down this really good music right now that's actually, like, very good for my ears? But it's actually not, because I feel like I can't study and I'm getting F's in all of my classes. I don't know what to say about that, but I think you definitely got tricked.
I mean, I grew up in a household where it wasn't like my parents were arguing back and forth. It was just the loud noise of bagpipes just drowning in my ears.
But that's what would happen, though. Like, if people didn't argue, they couldn't, like, explain themselves, and your mother is just basically arguing with your father by using bagpipes. Like,
by bagpipes, yeah, yeah.
You know what? You know what, bitch? I'm going to treat you bad later. I'm going to think about this moment, and when I'm blowing out, I'm just going to blow up.
Okay, let's change the subject, please.
Okay. By the way, have you been to Stonehenge before? Or, you know, ever?
Stonehenge, where the demons dwell, and they do live well. I've never been or had the pleasure to go up to Stonehenge, and I want to make the trek, but have you? I'm pretty sure you have been, right?
No, I haven't. Milt has actually been there, I think, with Melissa. And we were supposed to link up to some extent in that trip, but we did not. I don't. It's off the beaten path. And are you doing laundry, or was that like a clip that was being played?
There was no clip being played. I was gonna play a clip here soon. Just speaking of Stonehenge, but we'll get into it because I loved the setup of this set piece, and it was actually one of the first things they filmed. It was like the test part of getting this film made, was doing this Spinal Tap bit.
It's about an actual band that used Stonehenge, like, in I can't remember the band, like, is eluding me, but it most of the movie itself, that is an illusion, is predicated on things that, you know, allegedly happened as ideas before Spinal Tap came out, or you know, just Spinal Tap is mocking quite literally exactly what's happening this time. But it's 18 inches. Do you think honestly, like, of all of the jokes that land or don't land, that's the one that I don't understand. If I'm gonna, like, belittle this movie in some way, and I tried to find a way, and this is my way, I think they could have been 18 inches is ridiculous. There's no way it gets on stage. It's, like, so exaggerated. They can make it 36 inches. Yeah, I don't know, just double it. It's still hilarious, but 18 inches is, like, it's too far. They went too far. The joke, it just was, like, it was funny. But, like,
here's the thing.
It could have been funnier.
Here's the thing, and I see your argument, but I disagree, because the whole part of this movie is, like, it starts little and it just keeps seeing how far it can push it, right? So we could go with the drummers, and I'll play a clip real quick here.
Your first drummer was
the Peeper.
John Stumpy Peeps.
Oh, yeah.
Great, tall blonde geek with glasses.
Good drummer.
Great look, good drummer.
Good drummer.
Fine.
What happened to him?
He died. He died in a bizarre gardening accident some years back.
It's really one of those things. It was, you know, the authorities said, you know, best leave it.
Yeah. It's not
unsolved, really. You know.
And he was replaced by
Stumpy Joe.
Eric Stumpy Joe.
Childs.
And what happened to Stumpy Joe?
Well, it's not a very pleasant story, but. No. He died. He choked on. The official explanation was he choked on vomit.
It was actually, someone else's vomit. It's not...
It's the ugly one.
You know, there's no real...
Well, they can't prove whose vomit it was. They never, they don't have facilities in Scotland Yard to print
spectrum photographing. You can't really dust for vomit.
No.
Can't dust for vomit. So what I'm saying is they take one small little joke, right, and make it kind of believable, a bizarre gardening accident, then the vomit. And then what's the last drummer die of?
Spontaneous combustion.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
But no, but like that it sets up a punchline that actually existed throughout the entire movie, basically. And I'm saying like 18 inches is like immediately there. Like it just jumps to that. And I think it could have been, there was a presentation of like Stonehenge and like the album, like there was a presentation that could have, I dug in hard here to try to like find something that actually would make this movie better. And I think that actually could be better, like legitimately could be better. An 18 inch Stonehenge is opening up a box and seeing that it's, I think they would get rid of it ultimately.
You don't think? No. Well, the band didn't know that it was going to be put on stage. Like this was all Ian's idea. When they saw Stonehenge coming down, and the dwarves dancing around it in fear of maybe crushing this Stonehenge monument in quotes, they were livid after that. That's part of the hilarity in it. And then you finish with Derek Smalls having a legitimate question and saying, are we going to do Stonehenge next show? And they're like, no, absolutely not. So they were definitely not in the know of this. It was all Ian. And then Ian passes off the blame because, you know, Nigel wrote it on a napkin. And I mean, I didn't catch it when he wrote it on the napkin that he did the two little dashes to make 18 inches. They're just doing what they're told, man. They're just doing what they're told.
So I did catch that because I often, when I'm doing my running log, I that's seconds as well. So 18 inches, it makes sense that.
But did you catch it on the first time you watched it? No, I don't think so.
I mean, I would have to go back to my former self, and I can't do that. So memories are elusive in that way, even though people think that they're not. They are very elusive. Do you think they really treaded water in a sea of retarded sexuality and bad poetry, though?
You know, there's some semi pseudo intelligence that come out of them at different times throughout the movie.
What would you say? So, what pseudo intelligence? What's your favorite pseudo intelligence that comes out of them?
My favorite, probably. I like Derek Smalls smoking a pipe and really kind of comparing them to poets and, you know, Byron and T.S. Eliot. I think it was. I can't remember. And then I really, really want to explore, and I don't think this ever happened, but when they were at the end of the tour, David St. Hubbins was talking to Derek Smalls about what they wanted to do. And they had this freedom to do something, and they wanted to do a musical exploration of Jack the Ripper. And it would have been, I think that would have been a gorgeous thing to see.
I think, you know what that became? Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd, yeah.
They literally had the idea of Sweeney Todd before Sweeney Todd. And Tim Burton and Johnny Depp.
Also, he did a little mention of.
By the way, this just came to me. Like, I didn't prepare this. Like, that, like, they are. I wish they would have, you know, Best in Show happened, and Waiting for Guffman happened. And I'm addicted to Christopher Guest movies, but, like, there's nothing been like this ever to be abundantly clear. And I wish there were, I mean, it's asking a lot, like a collection of four individuals who are just addicted to wanting to make our lives better to some extent. I don't know.
Do you know that they started shooting the sequel last month?
I had no idea.
Yeah, Rob Reiner is directing.
We did talk about them wanting to do this. I think with Milt in a thread, but I was like, How much can you actually believe?
It's happening. Hey, Nigel.
And speaking of, the interview you just recently sent to me, which I didn't know even existed to begin with. I don't know if you have the sound quality here, as you're the patron saint of quality footwear, but
I don't have it, but I can add it in later.
Yeah. There is one moment at the very end of the movie that is one of my favorites, and also like the ending credits is almost better than the movie lines themselves, of talking about are you racist? Like only white people are.
I have that.
Okay.
Here we go. This is part of the credits.
You play to predominantly a white audience. Do you feel your music is racist in any way?
No,
of course not. We say love your brother. We don't say it really,
we don't literally say it.
No, you don't say it.
We don't really literally mean it.
It's great.
So I don't know how to define it. It's like the lack of self-awareness, but it's not even that. It's just like he's just being like Nigel, he's being himself. We don't literally mean it, but it's like we're not trying to say this, but we did say it, and it's kind of like everything that they are. It's like, yeah, where does this entity that is creating music as we see fit, and whatever it is to you, it will be. But we have no fucking clue what we're doing, basically. And I think that's life. Like, how often do you say to yourself, like, no idea what's going to happen today, no idea how to do this, but we're just going to figure this out. And I feel like that is Spinal Tap, but to a very, very distant T. I mean, every single day I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to work. I have no idea how I'm going to do this. I've never done this before. But I'll figure it out. It'll be all right. And I think I'm slightly competent, but like I think they're definitely inadequately competent, and so that
they
take it to like an n-thousandth degree.
There is this thing called imposter syndrome, right, where you feel like, what the hell am I doing? Why am I in this position, or how did I get to this point in my life and this responsibility in my life? But at the same time, like you have to do it. You know, you have to take the reins.
You have to be self-aware in that moment, though, to understand imposter syndrome. Like, I shouldn't be here, and like you're comparing yourself. They have no idea of the other.
Ignorance is bliss. They're rock and rollers.
Yeah,
that's what they do. Should we get to ratings?
Would you have, like, in terms of your life continuing? Would you want to have a good time all of the time, or just some of the time?
Define good time.
That's up to you to define. It's not me.
I mean, life is full of ups and downs, and you can only appreciate the ups if you've had the downs, right?
This doesn't sound like David talked to me now, but I believe, because you've told me this before, that you believe everything, or virtually everything that you read, and that makes you a little bit more intelligent than most. You still read everything and believe everything that you read?
Why does your British accent sound like a wizard troll under a bridge? That's
I'm from Seattle.
Giving you a riddle.
I am from Seattle.
Got it. That's very
There's an actual troll under a Seattle bridge. That is what you're saying. So that if this were a joke in Spinal Tap, that would actually go over quite well, I think. Nonetheless,
what if, you know, David St. Hubbins was, well, he still is alive today. He's still in the band. But do you think he gets on Twitter or Facebook and just believes? Do you think he's just like a very hard like conspiracy theorist now? Like that's kind of he's reading everything and he believes it.
Ooh, that's a good question. Man, you really have to like, you got to get like four Daniel Day-Lewis's to like be able to pull this movie off for this extended period, like 40 years.
I don't think David St. Hubbins is on social media. I think he still has like a Nokia flip phone.
I have no idea. I have, yeah. I mean, I have no idea. You know, it's funny because Saves the Day, by the way, who you are a fan of, and I am, or I was, I don't know. We have a weird relationship, but they, Chris Conley, like had the lead singer of Save the Day and the writer, had an interesting comment on Christopher Guest in like maybe like 2000, I want to like 5 or 6, something like that, 2007. Give me a couple of years, but like he actually was addicted to Waiting for Guffman and Spinal Tap and all of the movies that came out from the Christopher Guest mind, who's Nigel Tufnel. And it made me want to get into all of the movies even more, but like they are really terrific. And I guess I would leave it with this before we get to the ratings. Like, what would be your favorite besides Spinal Tap?
Mockumentary wise, it'd definitely be Best in Show. A Mighty Wind and Waiting for Guffman. I'd say it goes, this is Spinal Tap, Best in Show, Waiting for Guffman, and A Mighty Wind. And that's not a slight to A Mighty Wind at all. It's still really great. Yeah. But I feel like that's the order that I would put it in.
No, I would put A Mighty Wind last as well, but not a slight. But Two Left Feet is like hard to argue against.
Eugene just, Levy? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In every way, shape, or form. And also believable. Like
believable.
Yeah, the characters are so good. Like are so good. But I'm gonna change from this and we're transitioning. But like Waiting for Guffman, to me is more complex than all of them and is so, so deeply sad. And all the ways, you know after watching it. But like Waiting for Guffman, but I don't think it's the best directed. I don't think it's like you have one performance that like Best in Show basically has better performances and it has better directing, has better pretty much everything.
The jokes are
and Waiting for Guffman, it was like I love to get into that extremely sad mode. And that movie got me there. I was like, God, that is Old Boy does that to me. It's like, fuck. Like I don't know what to do with myself. But Best in Show was like hilarious, good lines, quips, like it's got punchy dialogue. But like Waiting for Guffman was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do right now after watching this movie. Like I don't really like this feeling. I gotta get rid of this. And I love to have that in movies. And it's rare to get it. Best in Show didn't give that to me though. And it's hard to get that. Not that I say that, you know, Holy Mountain, Alejandro, like Holy Mountain, I get there. It's like, ugh.
It gets under your skin, right?
I like to get things like Taste of Cherry. We should probably do an episode on like getting under my skin.
Requiem for a Dream.
Oh, God. And I actually haven't seen Grave of the Fireflies. And that's allegedly like a Requiem for a Dream type movie. But nonetheless, we should get into rating. I've extended this well beyond this. Man.
Should we? Yeah. The ratings here. Did you want to rate The Puppet Show first?
So, my wife, I was rewatching things today before the eclipse, by the way, and it was just so hilarious because on the marquee it said like, you know, Puppet Show and Spinal Tap, and typically speaking, in my experience, that women don't tend to very much like this movie, at least the women that I've been around. And she was laughing hysterically of that moment. And but like, you know her, she asks questions that makes it even funnier. It's like, oh, did that really happen? Like, is this what they're trying to do? And I was like, that's exactly what they were trying to do. A puppet show is so hilarious. But she's a very literal person.
Has she seen the movie before, or have you tried to show it to her?
Yeah, we've seen it. She did not like it the first time, and then this was the second time, and she actually really enjoyed it.
I think it takes like a little, you got to crack the shell and get in there.
But anyway, ratings. We got one movie, strangely enough. But here we are. Don't like to dress up, so.
We do it more than most.
Yeah, it seems like that. I'm going to copy and paste into a new spreadsheet, and I'm not going to look at yours.
That's fine. That's perfectly fine. While you do that, I'll play this.
This is special too. It's a, look, see? Still got the old tagger on it. So you never even played it. See?
You just bought it.
Don't touch it. Don't touch it.
I wasn't going to touch it.
No, don't touch it.
I was just pointing at it.
Well, don't point even.
Don't even point?
No, it can't be played. Never. I mean,
Can I look at it?
No. No, you've seen enough of that one.
Okay. We ready?
Yeah. Ready. Go ahead.
Best performance. I honestly don't know how else to rate this movie. I really don't know how to rate this movie. So I will go ahead and say that I'm going to allow you to just go ahead and rate it.
Okay.
And before you get there, I just want to say I really enjoy this movie.
I do too. This is difficult for me because this is definitely one of my favorite movies. I've never seen this in a movie theater, but I think this would be a top 10 movie going experience to see this in a crowded movie theater with a bunch of fans. Like, that would be a lifetime, like, that'd be like a bucket list kind of goal, right? This is,
we can make
something you want. Yeah. Make a wish, that, you know, that kind of thing. But best performance, I gave it as kind of like a cast of a wide net, because even though all the actors didn't get a writing credit, I'm lumping them all in there and I'm giving them an A and a 90.
Got it.
Best quote. The fact that I can't pick a single one because they change intermittently. Like, you know, him playing the piano and it's just this quite sad well tune. Played. Very, very, very well. And it's E minor is the saddest note. Is it E minor?
No, it's D.
That's D minor.
D major.
Yeah. It's just the saddest note. And then Marty goes, what's this one called? And just the line, you know, lick my love pump. This one, you know, he's chewing gum. But the quotes, it's one of the most quotable movies of all time. It's a 100 for me on that. Score, you can't have a rockumentary without an amazing score. The fact that they played their own music, the fact that they created their own songs over decades with, you know, the Flower People and Give Me Some Money and, you know, all of these like different intricate kind of pieces. And then making it work with the tone of the film, it's 100 as well. Editing, I got to bump this up here because I don't know what I'm doing. I thought the editing was great. They ended a lot of scenes on a button, which is really hard to do in comedy, which is landing and ending the joke on a very high note. They even did it with the end of the film where they're rolling through the credits and they're asking Nigel what do you think he would be doing if he wasn't a rock and roller? And he kind of goes into this improv bit of like, oh, I'd be a chef?
No, he's a shoe salesman. He's like, oh, what size are you? Like, and then
I think we have that.
Rob Reiner is interviewing continually, and he's like, no, we're all out. Do you like that in black?
He's doing this improv with them, and it's great. And then, like, the very last line is like, well, do you think you'd be happy doing that? And Nigel thinks for a second. He's like, well, I don't know. What are the hours? Fantastic. So the editing is just brilliant with the comedy. So 95. Best screenplay writing. Again, I can't find any faults in it. I think it's a tight, like, under 90-minute movie. So it's a tight screenplay. The writing is all pretty much improvised, but the fact that you can do this long form of improvisation and keep it intact without contradicting yourself in many ways, but building this world that they have with Spinal Tap is just amazing. So that's a 95 for me. And directing, I think Rob Reiner out of the gate did a great job directing this. It's funny enough that they got director of the cinematographer, Peter Smokler, who was well known for doing rock documentaries, and they really wanted him to, like, film it like that, and he was the only one that couldn't get the joke. He's like, this is the exact thing that I see when I did these, you know, when I did these documentaries of the band and of everybody else. So, but the directing was great. I gave it a 90. So overall score of a 93.5. That's the highest score by far that I've rated any film. And there you have it.
Yeah, we'll have to quantify this afterwards, but there's no other way to in my opinion, to justify the existence of this film. And it's when I legitimately, if I actually, like, look at the performances, it's about as close to 100 as objectively I can find. So I've provided the same score for every one of these, and that's 110, because these go to 11. That's all it should be. And I'm glad we actually have an actual objective person that is bringing the score down. But I can't not give the, I mean, the quote, like, this is honestly the best quotable movie of all time. The score is presented as the band, and they have actually written and, like, presented the songs themselves. The editing, I guess, if you would have had to, like some sort of qualm with it, maybe that's it. But the directing is hilarious. Also, the director is in it, and the screenplay writing is the best of all time. But, like, the editing would be the only thing that could maybe be better. But even, like, at the very end with the rolling in the credits, it's just like, this is terrific. There's no sound or no music, I should say. And it was just this conversational tone, and which makes me want to watch the other, what, 2+ hours or whatever it might be of this movie, which I haven't seen before. She probably should have before this, but David, it's been a lot of fun.
One other fun fact that I found out about this, and this is kind of what made me go down this rabbit hole of, like, finding these, like, random YouTube interviews and stuff like that, is, like, whenever they would go and do even, like, radio interviews for, like, local radio stations and stuff like that, these radio stations would be, like, wanting to talk to Christopher Guest. And they would never break character. They would just come in as Spinal Tap and leave as Spinal Tap and never, ever break character, which, kudos to them.
That's what I mean by the long con. Like, they have continued to do that. Like, and, like, how, I mean, they're shooting a movie now, which I didn't know actually was happening. How long could you keep that up, do you think? I mean, if you did that character, I mean, I guess you can keep it up for a long time, but, like, it's an effort. There is no doubt it is an actual effort. And I respect the shit out of them. And also, if you're making Christopher Guest movie, like, Christopher Guest, if you're making those type of movies, like, you are not looking for popularity, but you're looking to make a fucking hilarious joke for a long period of time that, you know, only some people are going to understand and get. Which leads me back to David Byrne and his understanding of music, generally speaking. But big fan. I very much like this movie. Yeah.
I'm glad we got to talk about it because, you know, it's one of my, like I said, ultimate faves. And what are we going to be doing next week, Jonathan? Next week?
Oh, yes. So I really want to talk to you about Jack Nicholson. So we actually have, strangely enough, I mean, we've known each other for about 20 years, a little more than that, but like, we've always talked about movies, but we have never talked about movies that we haven't seen. And only, I would say, recently in a very limited capacity. But strangely enough, there was a moment in South Florida, we were together recently, that both of us realized we didn't know Jack Nicholson very well. Or I shouldn't say very well. As well as we probably should have. For example, I had not seen and have not seen Chinatown, which is...
Great film.
Looking back and looking now, hilarious. And I still don't really believe it. And I guess you probably think the same about me. Steven has not seen The Shining.
Yeah, I've been. It's one of those things where, you know, like when you have like a really good meal and you don't want to eat it too fast and you're like saving a little bit for that like last bite. Like Stanley Kubrick is an amazing director and he's got this beautiful filmography and I want something to look forward to. And I kept putting it off because I want that, you know, that savory last bite.
You and I are so different. You are, this is why I get along with my wife better than you. Like the fact is she has a very good point on that. And I actually thought like that until we got together and I was like, you make the best point about this. And she was like, if you die tomorrow, you had a shitty meal and that's on you. And I was like, she's a lawyer. So like, that's a pretty damn good argument. Like I for the longest time was like pushing that off. And I was like, no. Like you want to, basically you're an arrogant son of a bitch to think I can stretch and I can understand movies so complex that I know the lifetime that I am going to live and therefore how many movies I can fit into my existence that are going to be good or bad, so on and so forth. You got to fucking go. You got to rip it. And this is what we're going to do. Chinatown, The Shining.
I've got a David Sade Hubbard's argument on that. It's really quite simple. I'll catch it up when I get in reincarnated. That's when I watch it, you know?
I guess.
Reincarnation.
That does make sense. But
yeah.
Spinal Tap.
I'm excited. You don't know Jack. I don't know Jack. We're going to check out some Jack Nicholson movies. That's what we're doing.
Peace out.